As the narrative goes, rock stars have it pretty good. They take the stage every night to screaming, adoring fans. They prance around singing great songs while everyone else sings along. Then walk off the stage to a bevy of groupies and a tour bus stocked with booze and who knows what else. Of course, the closest most folks ever get to that experience comes when they sing Sweet Caroline into their shower heads, Mike Pesca, or maybe when they take the stage at the local karaoke bar, Rachel Martin. But what if you could actually rock and roll all night and party every day? Wouldn't you want to? Well, one group of would-be stars is living the dream, living the life, or at least imitating it as best they can. They form the nation's tribute bands. And in recent years, their numbers have mushroomed. Whether they cover Guns N' Roses or Billy Joel, they are in demand. Our next guest spent a year on the road with Sticky Fingers, one of the nation's more successful Rolling Stones tribute bands. Stephen Kuritz's new book is called Like a Rolling Stone, The Strange Life of a Tribute Band. And Stephen joins us in studio. Hey there.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's get some terminology straight. Is there a difference between a tribute band and a cover band?
Yes. A tribute band is sort of like a very highly specialized version of a cover band. A cover band plays a wide range of other people's material. A tribute band plays, dedicates itself to a specific group. And the idea is to emulate them as closely as possible. You sort of want to trick the fans into thinking that they're seeing the Stones or the Who or Zeppelin or whoever.
And there is kind of, with a tribute band, the word itself evokes this kind of, this honor that they're giving them, this emotional relationship that the band has with the band that they're emulating.
That's true. Most tribute bands, you don't form a tribute band to get rich. Most tribute bands are formed by rabid fans of the group.
Can you make a living, though? I mean, there are a few. Super Diamond, the best-known Neil Diamond cover band, they play pretty big clubs. I mean, they do pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, there are a select few tribute bands who make a living at it. They tour. They have managers. Some of them maybe even have groupies, like real bands. One guy in a Zeppelin band, there was a piece in Spin this past month about what people in the music industry make, and the singer of a Zeppelin band said he made $150,000 a year, which was more than an A&R guy at a record label or an indie rock producer or many other jobs. But that's rare. I mean, most tribute bands don't make anything, or, you know, they play at local bars or fraternity houses. You really have to hustle. There are very few that make a living.
So they have day jobs?
Yeah, they do have day jobs. Almost all the guys I followed had some sort of day job.
I do want to get a little music in here. Let's listen to a clip of Sticky Fingers. Let's assess how well they do their work. Let's listen to Sticky Fingers play Brown Sugar. They did so bad. I think they sound pretty good.
They do sound pretty good. The thing about Sticky Fingers that I sort of found out when I reported the book is that sometimes the lead singer could drink a few too many beers before, during the show, and so it would all depend on his, you know, state of inebriation.
When a fan goes to see Sticky Fingers, are they going to see Sticky Fingers, or are they going because they can't get into a Stones concert?
It's a little bit of both. Mainly they're going, I mean, a tribute band is sort of a happy substitute. The people on stage would probably rather be in the Stones, obviously, and the people in the crowd would rather be at a Stone show. But since neither of those things are really an option, they'll take Sticky Fingers, and they'll have a great time. I personally had a lot more fun at a Sticky Fingers show than a Stone show.
Why?
Well, I'll give you an example. I paid $200 to see the Stones. I literally sat on the roof of Fenway Park, so I had the worst seats imaginable. I couldn't see the musicians. I would sort of have to stare at the Jumbotron screen and then look back to remind myself that I wasn't watching it on TV. The Stones are just completely cut off from their fans. Sticky Fingers, I got to hang out with them. I would stand right up front at the shows. I would request songs. I would drink a beer with the band afterwards. And it wasn't just because I was writing about them. I mean, really anybody could do that. So the experience becomes about the music. It's purely about the Stones' music and not about seeing Mick Jagger or hearing, you know, a cannon go off or whatever.
It's like people who go to minor league baseball games, right? I mean, you're supposed to be purist. They're getting away from all the hype and just going for to try to reconnect with what it's supposed to be.
The exactly. Music is to be. The other thing about a tribute band, and really this goes for all sort of small working bands, is that it's like a little business, and you want to keep the customers happy. So, you know, they will honor a fan's request.
Can we talk about Glenn Carroll? You spent
sure.
a lot of time with him. We alluded to it earlier.
Yeah.
This man, he's a lead singer of Sticky Fingers, and he plays Mick Jagger.
He does, yes.
Has he assumed this personality in all walks of life, or it's just when he gets on stage?
No, he's pretty good about it. I mean, considering that he's basically, I mean, it's a very strange sort of, you know, psychologically, it's very strange to be a tribute performer. I mean, there are times when Glenn is flown to California and plays for 5,000 people, and people are screaming for him, and, you know, he's gone on TV, he's been profiled.
Are they screaming, Glenn?
No, they're not screaming Glenn. They're screaming whatever, Mick, or, you know, they're not screaming Glenn. However, I mean, he does sort of have his own renown. He's sort of carved out his own niche in rock and roll. But what I'm saying is that, so he'll get back from a gig like that, and sometimes Sticky Fingers will be on the bill with, you know, Alice Cooper or Bad Company or some other aging classic rock band, and then he'll get home, and he comes home to his, you know, his small house, and he's faced with sort of day-to-day life that we're all faced with. So it's sort of a strange situation. Given that, he's pretty centered, although he occasionally slips into a British accent from time to time. And the first time I met him, I went up to Massachusetts, and he lived in this big house, and he had this beautiful girlfriend, and he had a Mercedes in the driveway, and there were all these pictures of him on stage with Edgar Winter and, you know, all this stuff. And so it really was very odd. It was like I was meeting a rock star, and he was in his sort of country manner, you know.
Does he have a day job?
No, he does not have a day job.
He does not have a day job.
No, he's been doing this full time for, you know, 20 years, and sometimes he'll drive 14 hours to play a frat house. And I remember one time I asked him, he was getting ready to go on a long drive, and I said, isn't that a long way to go for, you know, for one gig? And he said, I'd rather spend 8 hours in a car than 8 hours on a factory floor, which is true. I mean, if you can get away with playing rock and roll for a living and make as much as, you know, sort of a regular middle class guy, why not?
Does the Keith Richards in the band stick a cigarette in his guitar?
The Keith Richards in the band was so Keith Richards, it was frightening
at times. That he had to check into rehab?
No, he didn't have to. Well, he had formerly been an alcohol. He was a recovering alcoholic and a former heroin addict.
Okay.
So
check.
He really had it down. But in a year's time, he may have broke character once. I remember one time we were on our way to a show, and my tire blew out of my car. And so we're pulled over on the interstate, and he's dressed like Keith Richards jacking up my car. And it was just such a strange, you know, such a strange moment.
We talk about the fact that these guys would much prefer to be members of the Rolling Stones, clearly, in a fantasy kind of way.
Right.
And the people who go to see them would probably, if given a free ticket, prefer to see a Stones concert. Is there an element of sadness in this dynamic?
There is a slight touch of melancholy, which is probably another reason I was sort of attracted to it. I mean, there is an element that they wanted to be rock stars. And, you know, as a lot of people, as I did when I was a teenager, and it just didn't happen. And this is sort of like, this is their way to do that. And what you find occasionally with tribute performers, and I met a few like this, is that, you know, you meet a guy who's 22 and he's sort of full on, I'm going to be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to quit until I become a rock star. And you rarely do you see that guy at 40. You meet him at 22 and you wonder what happened. Well, you know, you saw a few of those kind of guys. Like, that's what happens if you go at it full scale and it doesn't happen for you, and you're still going at it in your late 30s. You know, a lot of working musicians will play in tribute bands just to supplement their income.
Hmm.
A lot of musicians sort of look down upon tribute performers. They think they're not being creative, and there's a lot of resentment for exactly what you said.
They're like vampires or something, adulation vampires.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. And you know, a lot of the guys who are doing their own original music want to distance themselves from that and look down upon it. But, you know, when I go to see Sticky Fingers, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting a Stone show, and it's going to be great. When I go to see some random band, they may suck. You know, and that's why club owners sort of book tribute bands. That's why they're so popular.
What are the conditions that have made these bands popular? I mean, is it just that these select bands, you know, the Stones, Neil Diamond, if I do say so myself, other kind of icons in American music are that good that they justify having these little mimics, if you will? Or is there something about that big name music, the corporatization of music, that makes those big concerts inaccessible?
I think there is a larger thing going on in the culture. And tribute bands are not new. I mean, they've been around. The first one started in the late 70s, and they really got popular in the mid to late 90s. But I think, I don't want to sound curmudgeonly, but...
Oh, you can.
But from my perspective, and I'm really too young to be curmudgeonly, but I feel like there isn't really a great rock scene right now. And those bands like the Stones and Bruce Springsteen and The Who, I don't know that we'll ever see a band that big again, just because there are so many things that drain away from music. There's the internet and video games and cable TV. And so it's not like the 60s and 70s when rock music was everything for a teenager. And so because there's sort of a void, these tribute bands are filling the void. And there's also an incredible amount of nostalgia in the culture. You know, so as the baby boomers age, there's just more and more of a backward-looking nostalgia, and these tribute bands sort of fit that bill.
Finally, you said you were an aspiring musician.
When I was a teenager, yeah. Although I discovered that I didn't have enough talent before I got too far into it.
So yeah. If you had to choose, is there a tribute band that you would like to become a member of?
Oh, I would join Sticky Fingers. I would be their
Did
Ronnie.
They offer that up?
No, I would be their Ronnie Wood, though. I would.
Well, the new book is called Like a Rolling Stone, very aptly named, The Strange Life of a Tribute Band. Stephen Kuritz is the author. It's out now. Stephen, thanks a lot for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And this may not be the greatest show in the world, but we try here at the Bryant Park Project, which is directed by Jacob Gans and edited by Trish McKinney. Our technical director is Manoli Weatherall, ably assisted by Josh Rogerson. Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Sharon Hoffman is our executive producer. I'm Mike Pesca.
And I'm Rachel Martin. We are online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.